As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Welcome to the Andy Staples Show. We've got a packed show for you today. I am in Las Vegas for the National Football Foundation Hall of Fame and the Sports Business Journal College Sports Symposium, where all the athletic directors and the conference commissioners are schmoozing around a hotel with a casino. They used to do this in New York. They're doing it in Vegas this year. It's a different vibe, I got to tell you. But the good news is getting to see a lot of people in person that I haven't seen for a while, including the great Bruce Feldman. Yes, my colleague at The Athletic, the greatest newsbreaker in college football, the guy who you go to when you need to know where a coach is going. Bruce has been a very, very busy guy the last 2 weeks. So Bruce and I sat down. We can't really do an autopsy postmortem on the coaching carousel quite yet. There's still dominoes left to fall. But Bruce and I talked about everything that has happened so far. And of course, there's quite a bit because I have not gotten a chance to really break this down with Bruce since Lincoln Riley went to USC, since Brian Kelly went to LSU, since Mario Cristobal went to Miami. And so we talked about all of that. And because it is that season of the year, stuff happened too. There's a point in the podcast where I mention Max Johnson at LSU, the quarterback. We were talking about the LSU quarterback situation. So I mentioned Max Johnson, and they've got Walker Howard coming in, and Garrett Nussmeier is on the roster as well. Well, 45 minutes after we recorded, Max Johnson announces he's in the portal. So it's just, that's how this thing goes. And it's that season. Now, after Bruce's interview, we have a special treat for you. I was a guest with Michelle Beadle. Her new show with The Athletic is called What Did I Miss? You remember Michelle from ESPN and NBC. She has a great new podcast that we're putting out at The Athletic, and I got to be the guest on Wednesday's show, so we've got a snippet of that episode, and you can hear more of that on her feed, which is What Did I Miss? And you can hear it anywhere you get podcasts, so where you get The Andy Staples Show and Friends, you get that show. So we'll start with Bruce and the coaching carousel. And then it's me and Michelle talking about what type of person you have to be a major college head coach. Hint, hint, it's not normal. Here's me and Bruce first, though. Got Bruce Feldman in the big chair. We're actually here in person together in lovely Las Vegas, Nevada. Or is it Nevada? I saw that whole season of Veep, and I'm still not sure how to say it, but Bruce, we are here for, all the athletic directors are here, all the conference commissioners are here. Couple coaches, we ran into a couple down there, but it's been a just incredibly weird couple of weeks in college football.
I thought you meant like last night was going to be weird.
Well, I mean, it got weird eventually. That's any of these nights with all these college football people, there's always something.
You also see people. So this is the Hall of Fame event, right?
Yes.
So you see guys who are getting inducted in the Hall of Fame. And then you see a handful of people who are honoring other people, right? So, but it's interesting to see guys that you either didn't cover, you only know more as NFL. So last night, I remember I got introduced to Darren Sproles.
Oh wow!
Who looks like he's 21 years old still. I mean,
wasn't he playing like a year or two ago?
Not long ago in the NFL. Obviously, he had a distinguished NFL career after K-State. But so it's cool to sit here. I mean, I ran into Patrick Willis last night at the bar. I haven't seen Patrick Willis really probably since he left Oxford. So that was cool. And you just kind of run into people here. I as one of our colleagues said, you know, we haven't seen people in 2 years in this kind of setting.
Oh yeah. Yeah. And you actually get to talk to people in person, but we used to be, there were more coaches here. Now, because of the early signing period, we don't see them. But in this past week and a half, 2 weeks, there've been some moves that kind of shook the sport. You had Lincoln Riley, you had Brian Kelly, you had Mario Cristobal. And
you think it's done?
The bombs are done dropping. I don't think the carousel's done. I think there's a lot of dominoes left to fall. But of all of those moves, which was the one, if I had told you 3 months ago, Lincoln Riley will be at USC, Brian Kelly will be at LSU, Mario Cristobal will be at Miami.
I'll tell you what's the easiest one to predict would have been. Mario Cristobal to Miami.
Right.
The hardest one is Lincoln Riley doesn't go to the NFL. Lincoln Riley leaves Oklahoma but doesn't go to the NFL.
Or a college job. That was my thing.
That's the one. Like, I'm not surprised that Brian Kelly ended up taking another job at some point, because there's a couple reasons. One, he's at Notre Dame like 12 years. That is a long time to be at Notre Dame.
Yes.
It has nothing to do with like whether, you know, South Bend, nothing. I'm talking about that job is like dog years to other jobs. Well, so that's a big thing. And we also know people who are like, yeah, maybe Brian Kelly could be a candidate at USC. And you're like, I don't know about that. But because you wonder about the fit. Just like almost any of these jobs, you would have wondered.
But he seems like a better fit at USC than at LSU.
He does. But we have seen a handful of highly successful coaches, Urban Meyer and Nick Saban, the first two, who didn't seem like SEC kind of guys. They never worked there.
And were fantastic there.
Yeah. And I'm sure they're not the only ones. If you get like Les Miles, I know there's a lot of bad stuff with Les Miles. Les Miles won a national title there. He's an Ohio guy who had been in the Big 12. He didn't seem like a slam dunk.
Yeah, I mean, the listeners of this podcast know how I feel about that subject. You don't have to be from the South to succeed in the SEC. You just have to care about winning. It has to be the most important thing to you.
And you have to care about recruiting, I think.
Exactly. You have to want to be. Now, that is the other thing with Brian Kelly. He was not the most aggressive recruiter on Notre Dame's staff. The most aggressive recruiter on Notre Dame's current staff is the one they promoted to head coach. And Marcus Freeman is that. Like, Marcus Freeman would be great in the SEC as a head coach because of that.
Yeah.
That attitude. Now, we'll see how he handles the other organizational aspects of the job. But Brian Kelly, not necessarily the tip of the spear when it came to recruiting, but will have to be if he wants to get the kind of roster you need at LSU to win the national title, which is what they hired him to do.
Yeah, the tricky part with this is, and I was somewhere earlier today having a conversation, we were talking about Lincoln Riley. I was like, how do you think he'll do? I think he'll do really well, because we know he's a really good offensive coach, and we know that his system, and he is also a really aggressive recruiter, and he's very involved in the process, but his system will attract a lot of talent, and there's a lot of talent around there. And my feeling is, if Lincoln Riley gets USC into the playoff within 3 years, that's a big deal.
Absolutely. It's a big deal for the conference, not just the school.
That too. But if you flip it the other way and say, if Brian Kelly gets LSU into the playoff and that's as far as they get, I'm not, that's not great.
No,
Brian Kelly, it's like how many years before, if Brian Kelly, what is his grace period before you have to win a national title by when before they're like, you're not the guy.
I think you got to make the playoff in the first 3 years.
Okay.
Yeah, or win the SEC or something.
You have to make the playoff within the first 3 years, and you have to win a national title by when?
5 years.
Okay.
I mean, they fired a guy 2 years after his national title.
The other guy, by the way, was not there 5 years when they, before they won a national title. So.
Right. He was there too. Or that was his third year. 07 was his third year. So, yeah, I think now Nick Saban was not fully.
No, but look at this right
at Alabama yet.
So Ogeron's first full year, 2017, 2018, 2019, 3 years, won a national title.
Well, and I think if you look at it, that's how there's not a lot of slow builds to a national title. Dabo took a while, But that was, you had to move the entire
that
program
right.
into
that
a different
right. but like,
echelon.
Urban was 2 years. Yep. Bob Stoops was 2 years. I feel like was, I don't know how far Tressel was.
I mean, Kirby almost, he was a miracle pass
but
away from
didn't.
Winning in his second
but
year.
But he didn't.
He didn't. But, and that ended, and now you wonder about the window.
You do wonder about the window.
Yeah.
That's a separate conversation.
Yeah, exactly. But you're right. And it is, you got to get there quick. It feels like. Where the window closes.
So I don't want to hijack your show, but
hijack away.
There's another coach in the SEC West who has paid a fortune. How soon? Like he went 8-4 this year. He lost to a really bad team to finish the season out. How soon before people like start to even die hard in the bandwagon? Are like, I don't know.
So Jimbo Fisher has a good recruiting class coming in, and I think that is why you're not seeing that.
When do you see it? Do you see it if he doesn't win more than nine, if he doesn't win 10 games or more next
imagine
year?
Imagine if they're 4-4 in the league again next year. It will be DEFCON 1 at that point. And they will look at, see, and this is, they get mad at me. The A&M fans get mad at me all the time. And I always tell them, it's not unique to you. When you lock these guys in for this many years and guarantee this much money, most of these situations end badly. That's not me saying, you at Texas A&M are causing anything. It's just that historically, most of these deals, not at A&M, but everywhere, end badly. And so when you guarantee that much money, you're bound to have a problem unless somebody wins a national title. So Jimbo is recruiting at a level where they should absolutely be competing for the SEC title. They were 4-4 this year. They cannot be 4-4 next year. I don't think they can be 5-3 in the SEC next year. Like, they need to show progress.
Yeah, it is year four.
Yeah.
We've seen now 4 years. You've had one good year, and the rest of it, honestly, is not better than what they had before.
Yeah, I agree. And look no further than another place where they did just change coaches, Florida. I mean, Dan Mullen was good in his first 3 years. Dan Mullen got fired because there was no hope. If Dan Mullen had Jimbo Fisher's recruiting class coming in, Dan Mullen would still be the head coach at Florida. Because there would be something to point to and say, here's what's coming.
But it felt like that program, because the recruiting, you use the word hope, there is that. But when you are just getting your head kicked in by like a bunch of more average teams, they lost to LSU twice, they got whipped by South Carolina,
yes.
They barely survived against a really mediocre FCS team, and then they got beat by Missouri. Yeah, I mean, that's like, you can have one or two of those, you can't have five of those.
No, and you know, it's interesting because people who are in Florida get it. They're like, yeah, you can't go on like that. Outside, they're like, well, but look at how good Mullen was those first 3 years. It's like, no. The trajectory is all pointing down.
Was it year four? Was this year four he got fired?
This was year four, yeah.
I don't know if I would say how good he was. Like last year, you have Kyle Pitts, who was probably the best player in college football. You had a very good quarterback. You were 8-4.
Correct.
That's not that great of a year. Right.
Now people don't think about it that way because it is, they didn't lose that second game until the LSU game.
But they
did. And then they gave Alabama the best challenge they got all year. So it was kind of covered up. The bowl game was where the cracks really started to show. And I
would argue the cracks started to show against an LSU team that had no business beating them in the Swamp.
Well, he didn't play Pitts. That was the other mistake there. But the bowl game, somebody, I had not thought about it this way, but another, a former player mentioned this to me and I thought it was really interesting. They said, I knew what the problem was as soon as he said the bowl game didn't matter and that the 2020 Florida Gators played their last game in Atlanta. He said, once you tell your players that that's how you feel, then it's okay for them to feel that way about any game.
Yeah, that's, you know, so this is similar. So I did this story with Alan Taylor, where we talked to a lot of SEC coaches. And one of the things that came up, and it was like it was an interesting point, I thought, was one particular SEC coach made the point, Mullen's excuse making after the games, you know, really sets a bad tone because it's like, I don't want to hear that you outgained somebody. You lost the game. You did not make enough critical plays. I don't want to hear about the other team's crowd was louder than this. Mm-hmm. I don't want to hear about a stupid shoe getting thrown.
Absolutely. These excuses. I think that pissed Florida people off more than anything else.
Yeah, but I also think it's like when players hear you not be accountable as a head coach and they hear the excuses, especially when they hear it over and over again, you know, that's – That's your culture.
Right. You don't hear excuses from Nick Saban. You don't hear excuses from Brian Kelly.
The guy who's going into the Hall of Fame right now, who I work with at Fox.
You never heard excuses from Bob Stoops.
Not only did you never hear excuses from Bob Stoops, the name of Bob Stoops' book that he did with Gene Wojciechowski is No Excuses.
Exactly. So. Well, and like in Florida, Steve Spurrier never made an excuse. It was well, they whooped us today, is what he would say. And that's, people appreciate that. That's not just a Florida thing. That's an everywhere thing.
Right.
I think fans, players, everybody else is like, you can accept that somebody just played better and beat you. What you can't accept is trying to come up with a reason for why you lost other than they beat you. And I think it bothers people. But so Billy Napier is in at Florida. He does not strike me as an excuse maker. So
no, he strikes me as just a grinder.
He's very much a grinder. I would say of the former Saban assistants, the one he's most like is Kirby Smart. Maybe a lower key Kirby Smart.
I'm sorry. You're saying Billy Napier is like a lower
key. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
I don't know. There's so many of them. It's hard to zero in.
Okay. He doesn't remind me of Pruitt at all. Even though he worked with McElwain, cause he went to Colorado State with McElwain, they don't really remind me.
I also feel like Pruitt was the most, just let me deal with Ball.
Yeah. Yeah.
Whereas Billy Napier, everyone I've talked to who's been around him thinks he has a very good sense of big picture.
He does, but he's also a very detail oriented guy. Like I talked to one of his former coworkers and he was recounting a phone call with Billy Napier over the summer. And they weren't working together anymore. And it was just going over like Monday, Wednesday conditioning for the off-season program. Like not Tuesday, Thursday, just Monday and Wednesday. And they spent like 30 minutes talking about it. He's like, that's who he is. You're not going to get a lot of small talk out of him unless you want to talk about Monday, Wednesday conditioning.
Yeah, I like that hire. I mean, I don't know, you know, I feel like our business should not be like, grading hires is kind of a recipe for disaster.
It is because you really can't predict which ones are going to succeed and which ones aren't.
No, I think feel like you have a feel for them, but like, I don't know anybody who would have said, oh yeah, Luke Fickell, that was the best hire of that class.
Right. And it wound up being the best hire.
Yeah. I mean, all I'm thinking of as well, he's the one guy who really didn't win his season at Ohio State. And he got there. And I mean, I wouldn't have thought he would have been a disaster either, but I wouldn't have predicted that he would have this team in the playoff.
We'll be right back after these words.
Looking for an assist with your credit card, but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
Do you think making the playoff cost Luke Fickell a shot at the Notre Dame job, or was it Marcus Freeman's kind of all along once Kelly left? Because it certainly felt like the day Kelly left, the swell of support for Marcus Freeman was immediate. We knew the players wanted
him. Yeah.
And then you realize, oh, it's not just the players. He's got significant backing within the administration as well.
Yeah, I don't think it's a slam dunk. If Luke Fickell was available, he would have definitely been the guy. Because remember, they are all have been exposed to how Marcus Freeman is, how he works, how his approach to things. So I think it's not a slam dunk. I think it would have made it a lot more complicated.
Right? So the Marcus Freeman thing, it reminds me a lot of when Lincoln succeeded Bob Stoops. Now, that was a little more orchestrated because Bob did it in the offseason, went to Joe Castiglione and said, here's what's going on. And Joe got a chance to figure out what he wanted to do. But it is very similar in that everybody within the organization was like, this guy's a, a future superstar, let's just do this.
Yeah, and I think what might be a little different is the job. Obviously, Oklahoma's a big job. I feel like Notre Dame has some other components that make it a different job. And I think one of the things that people think about is like, you know, if you told me Marcus Freeman got the Florida job, I was like, no, that's obviously a huge job. But I think Notre Dame is a different job than all the other jobs just because of everything that goes along with it. But, you know, it's Jack Swarbrick's job to know exactly how mm-hmm. somebody is going to translate. Yep. And I think, you know, over time, I think he could look at it. And even Brian Kelly, you know, people can mock Brian Kelly for the fake Southern accent and the family or whatever he said.
Family. Yeah.
But all those things. But he did say at one point, you know, remember it was like, you know, like he's the heir apparent. I don't know if people were like kind of parsing and trying to pick him. Did he mean like he's going to be the head coach here someday or did he mean, you know, whatever. But look how it worked out.
Well, and I think Urban Meyer to Ryan Day is another situation like that. I know Gene Smith did look at some other people and vetted some other people, but then at the end of the day decided that Ryan Day was very promising, plus that was the opportunity to keep the infrastructure intact. And I think the infrastructure being intact at Notre Dame is another big deal. That just puts you so far ahead of the curve when your whole organization is still there.
So this is a question for you, and this is like Stu and I have had this discussion to a lesser degree. I would make the case, and I could be wrong, but I don't feel like I'd be wrong on saying this, that like when you say the infrastructure at Ohio State, all right, so it's Mickey Marotta, the strength coach,
yep,
there forever.
Absolutely.
And is as good at what he does as anybody. Yep.
Brian Voltellini.
Yeah, Mark Pantone runs a recruiting department. Yep. Then you have arguably the best D-line coach.
Larry Johnson.
You have arguably the best receivers coach in Brian Hartline.
Yes.
Right? So those pieces, now we'll, you know, we can talk about Kevin Wilson's really good at what he does. Greg Sujaro has been a long-time offensive line coach. But like just say D-line, receiver, which are obviously staples of Ohio State, strength and recruiting. Especially when
Hartline took over. Yeah.
And, but especially when Ryan Day has been handling the offense well, I don't know if I feel as confident in the slam dunk natures of like, I don't feel like recruiting at Notre Dame, it's different, but it doesn't feel like as strong as Pantone's group at Ohio State. I don't feel right. like there is an assistant coach who is Larry Johnson on the D line. Right. I don't feel like there is an assistant coach. I mean, this is kind of
like if Harry Hiestand were still there, we'd be saying that. Yeah, about him
I would
for
probably
the
make that
line.
Case. And yeah. Look, Harry Hiestand may be coming back,
right?
My point is the infrastructure. I felt like with Ohio State was probably a little stronger. I mean, like Stu asked this question, and he was like, "Man, Notre Dame fans think Tommy Reese is I don't know. You could whoever you want to say he's their Lincoln Riley, and I think he's done a good job. But there is like." You know, it was a huge shot of adrenaline that, you know, he's coming back and good. He's a Notre Dame guy. And I think, I can't wait to watch Notre Dame in this bowl game to see how they perform. It's going to be fascinating to see. You know, you have a really young, dynamic staff led by a very charismatic guy that, you know, a lot of us have gotten to know over the years. To see him there as opposed to Brian Kelly, that is a big stark contrast. You can say about like going from Ed Ogeron to Brian Kelly, even though they're both 60-year-old white guys, but they're obviously way different personalities.
Very different.
But man, to go from the guys they've had, you go from Charlie Weiss to Brian Kelly, and now you got Marcus Freeman, man. That's a big change.
It is a very big change, but I think that's why having everything in place probably helps, although the players are clearly very much behind Marcus Freeman. Yeah. But like Matt Bayless is their strength coach. You know who Matt Bayless used to work with?
Dan Mullen.
Mickey Marotti.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
He and Mickey Marotti, Mickey was the head strength coach and Bayless was the assistant at Florida the first 2 years of Urban Meyer's tenure there. And I would imagine a few text messages or phone calls went back and forth about, hey, how does this work? You were in this situation. What did you think when you were in this?
Oh, yeah.
And I just think having that, if you have people you like and you feel like the players love them and are being, you know, that you the people have to be doing a really good job. Otherwise, you don't want to make you would want to make a change. But if you feel like they're doing a good job and the players like them and you can keep the players comfortable, you're in a good spot.
I got one for you.
Okay.
This is totally on.
Yep.
But you were briefly our Jacksonville Jaguars beat writer.
Briefly. Yeah, buddy. Briefly.
So, Mickey Marotti, the urban whisperer?
Oh, 100%.
Like, as I'm thinking about it, like Urban would go on vacation or go wherever he'd go, and he'd come back with like 94 ideas that would be bubbling in his head, and it would be basically for Mickey to kind of figure out what can we do with this, and what do I want to bring in, and different things. But I just felt like in that case, like you had somebody who's like, well, most of these strength coaches, especially at that level, are like either full-blown psychologists or mm-hmm. at least amateur psychologists. And I think it works with as much the players as the head coach in that case, where you have a very mercurial, very, I don't want to say Urban's volatile, but Urban is like.
Well, like, so I talked to Mickey. I did a story on Anthony Schlegel, who's the current Jags strength coach. And I talked to Mickey about that. And Mickey, basically, most of the talking they did was Mickey explaining how to
manage Urban,
how to communicate different things to him, how to give him bad news, how to, you know, all that stuff. So yeah, you're absolutely right. And I think those relationships, people inside the sport get how important they are. Now, are they be all in? You and I both went all in when Scott Cochran left for Georgia. We were very curious about what would happen in Alabama because that was kind of the last link. That was the big
one holdover,
the big piece of continuity with Nick Saban throughout his tenure there. I would argue that the guys they hired have done as well or better.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that, right? And so, and look, I think, you know, those two guys, you know, Matt Ray, I think what you had, they came from Indiana. I don't want to say they have a much more science-based program.
Well, I met Matt Ray when he was at IMG Academy, and I was doing a story on Daniel Falele.
Yeah,
and Matt Ray's trying to figure out how to make this 6'9", 400-pound guy into an effective offensive lineman. And it just hearing him break it down was like, wow, this is pretty high-level stuff.
But I think some of what, you know, we got to have – sometimes we have a hard time separating from, you know, you have especially certain strength coaches. And we definitely had this at Alabama, right, where you have a big personality. Like, he was the second most prominent person in the football program, you know, Coach Yeah. And there was –
Well, they would put videos of him on the video boards at the games.
In the games, right? So I think some of that is, like, feeding into, you know, the persona. And so it's like, okay, where do you separate that from the impact, right? And you definitely see that with a handful of other strength coaches. I mean, so – It's like the part where, and again, this is a lot of a tangent, but I think what is valuable and what is invaluable.
Okay, this tangent has taken us somewhere.
Good, I'm lost. Where?
You're a new head coach. Who are the three most important positions you've got to hire for?
It could be any position, including strength coach.
Yes, or ops director or recruiting director or however.
Well, I think the key thing is, so if I'm a head coach, am I the Mario Cristobal head coach or am I the Brian Kelly head coach?
So are you coordinator dependent?
Well, I am saying if I'm a head coach who is an ass kicker in recruiting, I'm not as worried about the recruiting coordinator. Like Ed Ogeron could have had Stu as his recruiting coordinator and he would have cleaned up. You know,
I'm imagining Stu like writing out postcards to recruits all day.
Well, I imagine Stu getting a lecture about gumbo and I'm
Stu's texting. Yeah, what was it when Jeff Collins was an assistant at Mississippi State? He'd do like the cans of swag that he would draw them himself on the cards. I just imagine Stu doing that.
But if you have the head coach who is like the guy who leads the charge on recruiting, then that's a check mark. Like, what is the – I think that it's harder to answer that question if Lincoln Riley is the head coach, I know I don't have to worry about the offensive coordinator hire.
Right.
If, you know, if like one of those, you know, handful of guys, I don't necessarily have to worry about the recruiting coordinator. I would absolutely say the strength coach is a critical piece. I know I'll get shit from that from some of my sports writer friends because, you know, I'm the freaks list guy. But I think it is – if you do not have somebody who's setting the tone in the off season, the rest of it – falls
the strength
falls
coach is the person who spends the most time around the players.
Yeah.
And absolutely. That's why they're it has nothing to do with the fact that they're the strength coach. It's they are the most important because they spend the most time with the players. They are your eyes and ears, and they are also your mouthpiece in a lot of ways. If you don't have a strength coach who can communicate your message effectively, then when you get the players back for practice, they're not going to be what you want. So, I mean, that's what I
so you would agree that should be one of those.
That's the most important hire. I think now if you're a coordinator dependent coach like Ed Orgeron was, or at Dabo Sweeney's actually coordinator dependent, then maybe offensive coordinator, defensive coordinator is your most important hire. But
I think most of them are actually coordinator dependent. I mean, I would argue that Urban was coordinator dependent.
He was. He was not really. He wasn't a play caller.
He was never a play caller. You know, it's like it was better. I mean, they had loads of talent, but it depended on that. I would certainly argue the same way of some of these other guys, like Jim Harbaugh. I think he's coordinator dependent.
I would agree with that. He could call plays if necessary, but he needed to hire Josh Gattis to get their offense into a more modern space.
Dabo, as you said, totally coordinator dependent. You know, the one guy who isn't is Saban.
Right, but chooses to let someone else call the defense.
Yeah, but he's out there, from everything I know, he coaches
the corners at practice.
But he's hands-on with the scout team, what they're going to do. He's calling everything out at practice. So I think that's setting the tempo. Like Gary Patterson was his own defensive coordinator. Yeah. You know, you have like Leach is not coordinator dependent because he's running, like he could have Cliff there and he's it's going to be Leach's stuff.
Right.
So I think it's, you know, for the most part, I think those guys, unless you're the play caller, you're coordinator dependent.
Billy Napier, by the way, for those who don't know, will call plays at Florida. He's decided that already. He hired his strength coaches, Mark Hockey. He brought him from Louisiana Lafayette. Hockey's an interesting one because sometimes guys just get caught up in weird situations. You remember when Mark Richt brought in Jeremy Pruitt to Alabama IS Georgia?
Oh, that was bad.
Okay, Mark Hockey was the strength coach that Pruitt brought with him. He was an assistant to Cochran. And so Kirby told me that he actually liked Mark, but felt like the program needed a clean slate, so he changed everything. Hmm. And so Mark then goes to Florida State, where Vic Valoria had just left, and then Jimbo leaves, and then Mark goes to Texas A&M, and Kevin Sumlin gets fired. So it was like a bunch of – so now he's finally back at an SEC program, and – he's actually coming in on the ground floor, so he'll get a chance to show what he really can do. But you always wonder when guys get hit by circumstances like that,
how does it play out?
Yeah. So this has been wild though. I mean, the Mario to Miami doesn't surprise me in that Mario is the coach at Miami now, but the way it happened, where suddenly they're acting like the richest program in the ACC when they've never been and they've never acted that way, that part shocked me.
I think the part that it's unseemly, you know, like Miami didn't have an athletic director. They also, you know, Manny Diaz was dangling there for a long time. So it was basically Mario.
Yeah, why not fire Manny Diaz and just say, if Mario doesn't take it, you're going to hire somebody else?
Because I don't think they wanted to get into a situation of saying, remember, the coaching carousel was already oversubscribed. I don't think they wanted to look at it and say, you know what? Maybe we'll take a chance on Jamie Chadwell. We don't know if he's going to fit here.
Right.
But we know he's a good coach, and maybe that's the next man up. Or we're going to try to get, you know, it's like now you're reaching, right? If you're going to say, hey, maybe Jeff Brohm would take the job. Like, I don't think they wanted to go down that road where it's like, we're not sure if this guy's a fit. We're not going to fire somebody unless we know this guy's going to fit. Or we're going to give him another year. Because the one thing I would say about Manny Diaz, and this is something I heard from people inside Miami, was the team never quit on him.
They didn't.
And they had a ton of injuries. And a lot of teams who struggle have a ton of injuries. And I don't want to say that's an excuse or an exclamation.
No, I thought this was actually Manny's best. Of the time he's been at Miami, this was his best coaching job.
I would agree.
And he found a quarterback.
His best players are freshmen and sophomores. So, you know, I think it just was like anybody who knows Mario well knows it was going to be super hard for him to turn this down.
Right? Of course.
Now, the part somebody asked me today, which I don't know, you know, I don't know how much it would have changed it, if at all, would be if Oregon won Friday night against Utah. Could he leave? Would he leave? I still think he might.
Before the Rose Bowl, yes. Before the playoff, let's say they had not lost to Utah at all.
No, both times. Yeah.
That would have been a different story.
That would have been a different story. But I think if you were Miami, I think. Now, here's the part is, like, if you wait on him, he may sit there and go, man, we're in the playoff. I'm close to winning a national title, as opposed to.
And remember, he's always said that the next two,
right, 2022 and 2023, he thinks are going to be compete for a championship teams. But I think, and he looked at this, and I don't know, you know, I've talked to him, but I don't know if he would ever even roll this around in his head, was maybe I'm not as close to a national title here as I thought I was.
Getting your butt kicked by Utah twice would certainly make you think that.
Yeah, it wasn't like these were close games.
Also, and this is probably a secondary consideration, but it is a consideration. And I know this was a consideration for him when he was looking at the OC job at Oregon. You know, Justin Herbert was a big reason he took the OC job at Oregon. Like, you got a quarterback, you got a chance.
Yeah, now he's good.
Van Dyke gives them a chance.
He does. It's interesting because if you were to ask recruiting, like, I mean, if you were to ask the any of the 247 guys, I'm guessing they would have said Ty Thompson would have been the horse you'd bet on. And
right.
In reality, I think if you ask football people now, not, you know, a year later, I think they would say, oh, Tyler Van Dyke is definitely the guy you would take right now.
Tyler Van Dyke just blossomed as the year went on. And so, yeah, if you can come into a situation where you've got a quarterback, and we'll see. So, because Brian Kelly has Max Johnson, they have Walker Howard coming in. They've got options.
I know Garrett Nussmeier's a guy, the old staff.
Garrett Nussmeier's
really
still
liked,
there, so. Yeah. So Lincoln Riley, the Keaton Slovis, Jackson Dart.
You know, Miller-Moss is still there. I know they liked him, and who knows? Maybe there's another quarterback
from
Oklahoma.
Maybe Spencer Rattler shows up, yeah.
Or maybe Caleb.
Well, we'll see. Billy Napier's got Anthony Richardson. We'll see. I mean, he's had some injuries, but he's also flashed some, so maybe he's the guy. But it does seem like these guys are somewhat set up at that position, that they can start fast.
Yeah, you would think. Now, obviously, in the case of USC, just seeing it, they need a lot of help on defense.
Yeah.
So,
and they also need help on the offensive line as well.
They do, and they had one great player on the team, and he's going to the NFL, and he was on crutches for the end of the year in Drake London, but they have a lot of work to go. I think for people to look at it and go, oh, these are how many 4 and 5 star guys they got in the program. It's like, that's not what they look like.
No, and they've got to deal with Utah. Like, Kyle Whittingham not going to stop being good at Utah. Like, they're going to keep putting out good offensive and defensive lines. And it does seem like that once they got the quarterback situation squared away this year, they took off.
They did. They're going to lose a bunch of good players, you know, going on.
But they always do, and they always
they do.
Replace
I feel like it's like an every year, every other,
every
year
other, thing, yeah,
with Utah. But we'll see.
And then Oregon will be good. So
who knows? You may have another twist on the coaching carousel in the Pac-12 South.
Oh, come on, Bruce! Don't stop this. To be continued. Bruce Feldman, it's been a pleasure.
Always a pleasure, Andy. I will see you at the bar.
We'll be right back after this message from one of our lovely sponsors.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
Don't just ride the index, seek to outperform it with Fidelity Active ETFs. Learn more at fidelity.com/active ETFs. Before investing in any exchange-traded fund, you should consider its investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Contact Fidelity for a prospectus, an offering circular, or if available, a summary prospectus containing this information. Read it carefully. While active ETFs offer the potential to outperform an index, these products may more significantly trail an index as compared with passive ETFs. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC, member NYSE, SIPC.
Thank you again to Bruce Feldman, who is the busiest man on earth right now, for sitting down, taking time out of his busy schedule to talk about the coaching carousel. And now on to my spot on Michelle Beadle's show, What Did I Miss? We had a blast. This was a lot of fun. Michelle just started doing her podcast at The Athletic. And again, if you're not subscribing already, go hit it. But we had quite the chat, and we talked about college football coaching carousel. We talked about mayonnaise. This is just a snippet of that chat. You can hear a longer version on the What Did I Miss feed anywhere you get your podcast. So here is me and Michelle.
This is obviously, you're a college football guru. You also like food, which is my other favorite thing. Maybe my first favorite thing to talk about in the whole world. But the college football thing, I've been sitting on this for a while, right? Like the carousel's been going on now. The latest is Miami hiring and firing, actually in that order. And so I, as much as I try to sit here and I know, like I'm not naive. I am an older person at this point. And I understand how business works and it's cutthroat. So my question to you is there anything that could be done, like little rule changes, tweaks here and there on how the process plays out that would make the rest of us shut up every year that this comes around? Is there anything you could fix in this process?
There is one thing, and it's something. Here's the problem with college sports in general. Every time they change something, anytime they tweak a rule, it's always ad hoc. They never overhaul things to think, okay, what should step one be, and then step two, and then step three? So what they did is they, it used to be that you had National Signing Day in February, and that was the first time that football players could sign their scholarship papers. And so if you fired your coach in November, that was great. You still had till February, so you didn't have to hire somebody right away. Well, a few years ago, they decided, let's do an early signing period, because 90% of the players don't want to wait till February. They like to get it out of the way early. Now, the way you probably should have done, the way it was intended to be done, was they were going to do it in August. And so football players who didn't want to worry about recruiting during their senior year of high school would just sign, and then they'd be done with it. And that would have been, I would say that probably would have been like 80% of the players. And so the remaining 20% would have done it in February. Athletic directors and presidents did not want this because they didn't want to sign a full class and then fire their coach. They didn't want the coaches to be able to have that as leverage in a situation where they might get fired. So they compromised, and they put the date in the middle of December, which didn't really help the people who wanted to sign earlier, but also created this incredible compressed time frame where you have to have a coach by Wednesday of next week. So if you fired your guy, you got to steal somebody else's guy like right now. And so it's funny because I used to cover recruiting. When I hired Sports Illustrated in 2008, it was to cover football and basketball recruiting. And one of the first columns I wrote there was, just get rid of this idea of signing day entirely. Let the players sign their scholarship forms whenever they want. Like if they're a freshman in high school, if you like them well enough and you want to, you know, put one of your scholarships on the line 4 years from now, let them. And it seemed counterintuitive at the time, but now a couple of coaches caught on to that and were behind it too, because they understood what you're getting at there. There's a lot of things that you could head off and avoid if you did it that way, but especially you'd avoid this compressed period where, oh my God, we just lost Lincoln Riley. We got to go find a coach, or Brian Kelly just left. We need a coach right now.
Yeah. Like it also doesn't help that some guys are more unlikable than others. And I think that sort of plays in, like the Brian Kelly thing, it wrote itself. And then the accent was just the cherry on top. And so,
oh my God, as someone whose Southern accent disappeared when he moved to Florida. So I grew up in Columbia, South Carolina is where I was born. We were there the first 7 years of my life. I talk like this. That's how I learned to talk. And so like my mom's from Selma, Alabama. Dad's from Charleston.
Oh, yeah. These are accents.
A lot of accents going on in my house. Not that I knew they were accents. I didn't learn my mom had an accent until college. And when one of my coworkers at the school paper said, some hick lady's on the phone for you, Andy. And I'm like, who is this? Somebody complaining about a story? I picked the phone. It's my mom.
Oh, my God. You're like, sir, get over here.
Yeah, that dude.
That's all right. Everyone thought my mom was a maid. And it was racist on top of everything because she has an Italian accent. And they're like, I think your maid answered the phone. I was like, A, we've never had a maid. That's rude. Secondly, that's borderline racist. But
I walked up to the guy like, you know that lady has two more college degrees than you do.
Yes. Thank you. Thank you. Also, you were in Florida, right?
Yeah. So I moved to Florida. After that, we moved to the Florida Keys, the fabulous Florida Keys, where everybody's from somewhere else.
That's fun.
So the kids made fun of me, and now I sound like I'm from nowhere. And so, I like the Brian Kelly thing, I keep wondering, was he walking around all day And everybody kept saying the word Tigers because that's how they say it there. Tigers. Right. And they just had a coach who, as one of his radio show guests said, oh, when Ed Orgeron got the job, he was like, we finally have a coach who doesn't need a translator. And so Brian Kelly, you know, I wonder if he's thinking, I'm replacing this guy who was like the perfect cultural fit. How do I do this? How do I fit? I'm going to say Tigers. And then he tries to say it. And then you get family, and it's just off the
and
rails
from there. So big day. I was like, what is that? What? That's not even an accent I'm familiar with.
Getting back to your likability and human,
yes,
you know, just decent human point. This job basically requires you to be a psychopath. So when you meet a college football head coach who has normal people skills, it is like finding a unicorn.
It's like dating. It's like, you're like, what? It's normal.
Yes.
Oh my God, that's sad. That's a sad. Who has, okay, name your, at the top of your list of coaches with such qualities, and by that I mean human. Who? Who's number one?
Matt Rhule. Now, he's left the college ranks because he's normal.
Right. Right.
He's too normal. But Matt Rhule is one of those guys that you meet him and you just like him. Everything. That's it. You get along. He can connect with anybody. He'll talk to you about restaurants. He'll talk to you about whatever.
See?
Dave Clawson at Wake Forest. He's very normal. Now,
they have other likes and interests.
Which is why he stays at Wake Forest, by the way. He's had, you know, he could have had Michigan State, Florida State.
Right.
I believe he could have had Virginia Tech this year, but he likes it at Wake Forest.
That's smart because he has the best of both worlds.
Yeah, it's not many. You don't necessarily see it as you get up to the higher levels because those people don't really want that pressure and that, like Dave Clawson, for example, spent 1 year as the offensive coordinator at Tennessee, and you know he just. Like he doesn't get the idea of being recognized in the grocery store. Like he wants none of that.
Oh, he doesn't care. Yeah. Good for him.
Yeah. He doesn't want it. So
he does.
And so you basically just want these guys who want to watch film and talk to 16-year-olds. And wow, that really sounds bad when you say it that way.
But I want to play a little game called Tell Me Why I'm Wrong. And I feel like we've got a few of these. So I'm going to start off with, you could tell me why I'm wrong. I'm just going to say them. I may or may not believe them, but I probably do. Number one, Cincinnati is the only redeemable team to root for.
You don't like Georgia with its walk-on quarterback, walk-on safety, and the other 20 guys were 5-star recruits that are just better than everyone else. Let's see. Michigan, I mean, Jim Harbaugh took a pay cut to keep his job and then led them to the promised land. Alabama has the best of everything and the best coach. Oh, wait. Okay. No, it's
and trying
no
to be the underdog.
There. Well, they were the underdog. You saw what happened when they were actually the underdog. I was listening to you guys the other day and you were talking about Nick Saban kind of ginning up the false outrage of being the underdog. That wasn't false this week. It was the first time in 92 games he didn't have to make something up to make them think that the world was against them. Like, I'm on a supercut for my show going, Georgia's going to beat them. They cannot win. Like, which I've never said about Alabama.
Oh, you really did think that?
Yeah.
See, there's something about Saban. He's like a Belichick. Like, they just somehow figure it out.
Oh, well, I mean, they're buds.
And they're, yeah, well. I mean, it makes sense. They're like soul lease. Yeah. Okay. So you're no. The only reason you're saying Georgia is because you were a walk on, right? And you did that at Florida.
Yes. Yes. I love the walk ons.
Yes. So your heart.
Yeah. No. But Cincinnati's fun to root for. Luke Fickell's fun to root for. He's an interesting cat. I mean, he was the head coach at Ohio State for like 7 months and hated that situation so much and that experience so much that he had basically decided never to be a head coach. Again, he was just a linebacker's coach.
Bad.
Everybody's going to leave him alone. And then he went to a coach's convention or a coaching clinic a few years ago, and he sees Mark D'Antonio, his old boss. And D'Antonio goes, you're good at this. You could be a head coach. He's like, no, I hate this. I don't want to do it. And so he gets talked into a Texas Cincinnati job, and here they are, the first group of five team in the playoffs. So I do think and I want that game to be competitive. You know, because everybody's like, well, they're just going to get blown out by Alabama. I was like, well, how would that be any different than all the other teams Alabama's blown out in the semifinals over the years?
Right.
So They did it to Notre Dame. They did it to Clemson when Clemson was a number one seed. I mean, it's not like that would be an unusual result. But I personally would love to see Cincinnati give them a great game. If they can beat them, great.
This is the underdog story. Yeah, like, or just make it, because they make us wait so long for the next set of games. So yes. By the time you get there, you're like, oh, and then just make it fun. Just make it something that we don't want to turn on something else to watch, because it's so depressing. All right, number two. An 8-team playoff is too many teams.
No, it's not. I think you can go up to 16 before you get to too many. 16 might be too many, but anything more than 16 is definitely too many. But you want to keep people engaged. You want people having fun. You want all parts of the country to feel like they're part of this kind of national cloth. And right now, the West Coast is not involved. You know, I guess if Lincoln Riley does some stuff at USC, then maybe they will be able to get into the mix out there.
Oh, he hasn't won there yet? I couldn't tell by that contract. I thought he'd already won 75 championships.
Yeah, not zero wins at USC.
Yeah, okay.
But, you know, that's crazy. He had some wins. And apparently he's got some song girls and band members playing for him while he tries to talk.
Please, please Google that, ladies and gentlemen.
Yes, it is.
That video.
it is everything you could ever want. I love the Yeti branding, because when I think
so subtle
USC the folks who can afford to go to USC and they can afford Yetis, but I'm not picturing a bunch of outdoors people.
It looks like a public access, like community college.
It does.
Advertisement.
It does.
And for it to be in Los Angeles, Hollywood, California, with the millions and millions of dollars given to them by like Hollywood donors. That's what we got. I need people to watch it.
It looks like, you know what it looks like? It looks like a game show in a Kevin Smith movie.
Yes, it does.
The game show in Mallrats is essentially what this is.
It's amazing. It's amazing. All right, number three. No one deserves the Heisman this year.
That's untrue.
Well, that's what you're supposed to tell me.
The guy who deserves the Heisman is named Will Anderson Jr. He's an Alabama. They call him a linebacker. He's really a defensive end. He's a pass rusher. Edge rusher is what the draft nicks would call him, and that's what they will call him when he goes number one in the 2023 draft. But he's the most dominant edge rusher in college football in 25 years, 30 years.
Dang. Okay.
31 and a half tackles for loss. I think he wound up with 15 sacks or something like that. He was the most consistent player for Alabama, the best player. There were a few games where he basically saved Alabama's defense. Alabama's in the playoff because of Will Anderson. They're also in the playoff because of Bryce Young, their quarterback, who is actually going to win the Heisman. But Will Anderson, so the Heisman is the nation's most outstanding player. Well, I think you have to be the most outstanding player in your own county to be the most outstanding player in the nation. I mean, it seems logical to me.
I think that's fair.
So Will Anderson is the most outstanding player in Tuscaloosa County. Therefore, he is eligible to be the most outstanding player in the country.
And yet, that's not how it's going to play out.
No, and it's just, so I vote, you know, there's like 900 of us. And I think a lot of the voters, they're just never going to vote for someone who isn't a quarterback or running back or receiver. I was encouraged last year when we elected DeVonta Smith, because I didn't think we were ever going to vote for a receiver again either. And DeVonta Smith, Mac was fantastic last year. And then you had Kyle Trask and Kyle Pitts at Florida, both of whom could have been up there. But DeVonta was clearly the best player. And so it made me feel good that we picked the best player. We basically eliminated that guy.
Y'all don't talk to each other and go, hey, why don't we do this? Like, it's funny to me, though. It's everyone's like, you may not know every single person, but enough. And that it's never just talked about, like, hey, why don't we change things up a little bit? Why don't we make it a little bit different and not so predictable every year? That's funny that it's still like a process where you're waiting for the outcome when you guys control it.
Well, but we had talked about it. I mean, a bunch of us talked about it. At The Athletic, we have a straw poll of the Heisman voters on staff, and we got a bunch of them. And Will Anderson was number one in our straw poll going into the championship weekend. Young wound up number one at the end, but Will Anderson wasn't even named a finalist, which means I'm not allowed to say what my ballot was. I think everybody's pretty aware who I think the best player is, but you know, that just blew my mind when they announced the finalists and he's not on there. It's like, what are we doing here?
Does he know that you guys think that highly of him? Like, how does that work as far as what he knows?
I don't know that he cares or knows. I've heard he's a good dude. I think, you know, he's concerned about making sure he's the best, most draftable prospect when he's eligible to be drafted.
That's all that matters.
And he's doing a damn fine job of that. And it's, what's interesting is it may come down to Will Anderson and Bryce Young for the top pick in the 2023 draft. You know, Bryce has to overcome the Kyler Murray height thing, but he has everything else. So I think he'll do fine, and obviously Kyler's doing just fine at the next level.
Doing all right.
But Will is one of those that everybody's going to want him. If it's not a draft where the team at the top absolutely must draft a quarterback, it'll be Will. Like, let's say the Jags are terrible again next year and they have Trevor Lawrence. Like, that's right. who they would draft Will Anderson.
Thank you so much for listening. Again, if you'd like to subscribe to What Did I Miss, you can find it on all of your available podcast platforms. And if you're not subscribing to The Andy Staples Show and Friends, well, what are you waiting for? Hit that subscribe button. And remember, stars matter. So hit that 5-star review as well. Speaking of stars matter, that is our podcast that covers recruiting with our friend Ari Wasserman and Mitch Light. You can subscribe to that through Apple Podcasts. Or if you're a subscriber to The Athletic, you get that one for free. You also get to listen to all the episodes of The Andy Staples Show without commercials through the Athletic app if you are an Athletic subscriber. So if you're not doing that already, go to theathletic.com/Andy Staples and get yourself signed up. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll talk to you on Friday.